Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They'll take care of all your insurance needs. And I'm in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. We'll get back to the officiating issue and Pat Chambers' post-game comments a little bit later. We now bring in Dave Paulson, the head basketball coach of Bucknell, coming off a 78-75 win on yesterday against Army. Dave, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be on the show.
All right, Dave, in watching your game yesterday, the one thing that struck me, I was impressed by your ball movement. The ball's not sticking. The importance in your offense to make sure the ball doesn't stick and you get people on the go.
Well, you know, I thought that was, I think as you said, it was about as well as we moved the ball. You know, we had 16 assists on 27 baskets. It's the best we shot the three-pointer all year, and it's because we threw the ball inside in the post the most we had all year, and we drove the ball into the paint and then kicked it out. And so as our guys have learned, you know, at times when we're not playing well, we've lived and died with jump shots without penetrating the paint. We got inside-out baskets, inside-out attacks, and guys made unselfish plays.
And they certainly did that. Every team has its own personality. Even those teams that you had with Mike and Ayers and so forth, every year I'm sure there was a different personality because there's a different dynamic introduced into each team. Now deep into the season, what's the personality of this team?
Well, you know, it's a great personality. We got a great group of guys, a lot of fun-loving guys. There was a stretch there in the middle part of the year, Steve, where we were playing hard and intense, but I didn't think we were having fun. I didn't think the guys were really playing, you know, there's a fine line, playing with an edge and attention to detail and a focus level that you need, and also playing with just unbridled joy. And, you know, I think our guys are doing a better job of having fun together and acknowledging the good play and retaining their focus level. One thing I'll say, we got a bunch of guys that, you know, they'll do some crazy things that'll drive me crazy as a coach, but they don't lack for confidence. You know, they really don't. They don't lack for confidence. They're not going to be scared by the moment. Sometimes, you know, you wish they'd have a little bit more regard for the situation, but it's also what allows them to step up and shake off a mistake and knock down a big three or to come up with a big stop. So, you know, I love the kind of swagger that the group is starting to develop.
The next part is, at one point you had to sit down Chris Haas in the first half, and if I recall the scenario, you brought him back in for the last offensive possession. But your team still played well in that stretch, and we haven't really talked a lot about Chris in recent weeks on the show when we've been together. What does it tell you that you're seeing some things that even when he's not on the floor?
Well, we do. We have a lot of different guys that can score. You know, last night it was not a foul on Zach Thomas, you know, who really picked up the slack. Other games it's been John Asnero or J.C. Schau. At Navy, it was Ryan Frazier who put us on his back and carried us down the stretch. And Ryan's averaging 4.5 points a game overall. And so that's the neat thing. You know, Chris really struggled at Navy. We had other guys to make plays. You know, last night, obviously, he shot the ball well.
Right.
But it's also important, you know, he's such a marked man. You know, he played the most minutes of anyone last night, and that was 28 minutes. So we've got good depth, and hopefully that'll allow everyone to be, you know, as fresh as humanly possible as we go down the stretch.
How are you doing right now with your points per possession at both ends of the floor?
Well, right now I think the latest stats, we're number two in the conference offensively and we're number three in the conference defensively, just in conference games only, you know, which is really the only stats
right.
That matter because some teams will challenge themselves more out of conference than others. So, you know, pretty well. And you know, I think we're doing a good job in a lot of areas. The one area that we're not scoring as well from 2-point line as I'd like, and we're fouling a little bit too much on the defensive end. So those are probably the biggest numbers where we're not, you know, at a pretty elite category. Is our 2-point shooting percentage and how many times we foul opponents. So if we can shore those up a little bit, and I think there's still areas and time where we can get better, you know, then I think we can continue to evolve and get better as the season progresses.
You have four games left in this regular season, and we all know that you stand in the number one spot. You've been there many times, so you know the elements it takes to close. The younger players, first time through for them. What are some areas that you feel, since you've been through it, that you need to impart to them at this time to give them the best shot down the stretch?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing is taking care of the basketball. And last night we played exceptionally well, and then we gave the ball away a couple times down the stretch. The ability to make your own foul shots. The ability to not foul, you know, like one possession game is going to be decided by that. Controlling the glass, and then really getting the 50-50 loose balls. And the one thing I would say is last night we didn't always play as well as we could have or as smart as we could have, but we really, really competed. And we've got a lot of 50-50 balls. We had a lot of balls that we deflected and came up with. We salvaged a couple foul shot misses with offensive rebounds. So, you know, those extra effort energy plays, those are what determine the one and two possession games when you get in the postseason.
You have Loyola and BU. There's been a separation in terms of the length of time. I know it'll be familiarity in personnel, but is it almost like playing them all new again because there's been such a separation in time?
Yeah, there really is. You know, I'm watching film of Loyola now from our first game, and, you know, it's amazing. I don't remember anything about the game. You know, I took voluminous notes after we played them, and it was, you know, what was it? It was January 21st, so it wasn't even a month ago. But so much has happened with our team, with their team. And so you review the game that we played against them, and then you watch the film of their more recent games, and yeah, it is. It's because there's so many different styles in our league. So we really got to change gears from the way Army plays to the way Loyola plays, and then we'll have to change gears again when we play Boston U.
Right, Loyola gets 51% of its points from the 2-point area. BU gets 43%. I mean, they're different styles all the time.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was going to say, there's no question. It's every game out, you know, Army got a huge percentage of their points from the 3-point line, and we did a great job taking away the 3-point line. And they scored some points in the paint. We were willing to live with that. And now it's almost like the opposite. You got to keep Loyola out of the paint, off the offensive glass, and maybe you can live with a couple kick-out threes. And that's the challenges of conference play where there's such a diversity in styles.
One final question, and this has nothing to do with your basketball team. When I was growing up in Connecticut, there was the little three, Wesleyan, Amherst, and Williams.
There's only one that counts.
I understand the only one that counts is up there in northwestern Massachusetts, near the Vermont border.
That's right.
What the heck is an F?
It's an Eve. Ephraim.
What?
Ephraim Williams founded the college, and so they're the Williams College Eves.
Eves.
Yeah. A little point of trivia.
There you go. Always wondered. Never felt like asking until I thought, you know what? I have to ask Dave this. It's his thing.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, I'm glad to illuminate you on all points in this world. Steve.
Right now, you better believe the next party, I'm armed. All right.
There you go. All right, here you go.
Good luck against Loyola at BU this week. Appreciate the time, my friend.
All right. Take care, Steve.
All right, Dave. Dave Paulson. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Great to be back with you on this Monday. Phone lines open at 800-795-9565. In all likelihood, Patrick Chambers will either be fined or suspended for what he said. That doesn't mean what he said. Okay, he should have said it and was entitled to say it. That doesn't mean that the conference also can't react, but he's had enough. He doesn't like the way the end of the Michigan State game played out. Ended up with a technical there. The dribble handoff against Illinois was about as benign a play as I've seen, I don't know, several hundred times in my career, and I've never seen that called a foul. And somebody said to me, that's a point of emphasis. I said, in whose world? And I said, I've done games all year. I haven't seen the call once. I let the players decide what's going on. And then this one here. Now, as I've pointed out many times, that doesn't necessarily mean Penn State was going to win the game. Could have. One possession game. And again, DJ Newbill had a great play where he stole the ball. It comes down the floor. And then some people have said, you know, Pat should have called the timeout. And that's, of course, from the Dick Vitale school of coaching. It's not the same formula all the time. Tom Izzo had a timeout available the other day. They ran the play in Valentine at the 3. He's coming down one-on-one with Samatrich. I don't want to call a timeout because guess what I've got Maryland doing? Backing up. Well, DJ went too fast for DJ, and DJ lost the ball. That's his fault. But that's not a coaching move. If Pat had called the timeout, fine. If he had called the timeout, fine. You know, set up what he wants, but it also would allow Maryland to set up what they wanted, too. I mean, there's two parts to a timeout. And he felt, as they came down the floor, nope, no timeout. Let him finish because he's got the situation the way I like it. Well, then DJ lost the ball. He lost the ball on his own. He was going too fast. This is after the Dickerson play. But how did Maryland score its points at the end? Going to the bucket, getting fouled, and getting to the free throw line. Well, no Jordan Dickerson in the game. He fouled out on that play. So when it comes to officiating, number one, these guys don't want to get it wrong. They have personal and professional pride. A big thing to them is to get contracted for as many games as possible because they're trying to make money. And they're getting paid a lot of money. And they're getting plenty on the per diem part. It all adds up. They also want to get tournament assignments, postseason tournament assignments, Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, whatever conference they're affiliated with, Big East, Patriot League, whatever. So you want to grade out at a high level because you want to get into that pool. then you really want to grade out at a high level because you want to go to the NCAA tournament. You really make a lot of money. So they don't want to mess up calls. So let's understand that. You don't want to mess up. There's nothing deliberate here. Just from a personal, professional pride point of view, you don't want to. For your own career, you don't want to. You want to continue to have trust and confidence in what you're doing so that you get more assignments and you move up the ladder. Okay, so let's take that and put that aside for a moment. I always do get a little concerned at this time of the year with the number of games guys at work. There are already 10 officials in the country that have already worked 70 or more games this year. That's a lot. And it's the usual suspects. It's the Jamie Luckies, the Roger Ayers, the Brian Dorseys, and people like that. They've all worked over 70 games so far, and there's still more games left. And yes, Kelly Pfeiffer is in the top 50 of games worked nationally. And look, if you're going to work 4 or 5 games in a week, and it's February, and you've been working 4 or 5 games a week since mid-November, you know, you're telling me that you're a machine and not going to get tired? Yeah, you're going to get tired. That's why the NCAA tournament and even conference tournaments are so crisp. Well, they make a mistake here and there. There's no question about that. But for the most part, the officiating is really good in the postseason. Why? They're rested. They're staying in the same spot. They're not traveling around. They're down to 2 games a week. And they're not traveling anywhere for those 2 games. They go in there and they stay. The big point of contention. Next part is replaying it. They've got to get over the hump mentally on replays. They've done it in football. Show it in basketball. Show what they're looking at. You got to make sure that the people in the arena are seeing what the people at home are seeing. Don't be afraid of it. It's all right. They paid good money. I want people in the arena. I want them in the stadium. Show them what they're showing them at home. So when they replay something, let the fans see it. They paid their money. I don't want this to be a studio game where it's actually a better game sitting in your living room than it is in the arena or in the stadium. Don't be afraid. You're replaying it for a reason. They're looking at the replay because they're trying to get it right. Show it. Next. The lead ref should be mic'd. He should announce to the crowd what they're going to review and then should announce to the crowd what the ruling is after the review. That way it's picked up on TV. It's picked up all throughout the arena. And there's no guesswork by the people. The lead ref should be mic'd and should then explain to the crowd what the call was on a review. Not on every foul, but on a review. Next. If you're going to let the 19-year-old quarterback have to go to press conferences all the time to explain what happened on that fumble, what happened on that interception, and have the head coach go out there and have the 21-year-old wide receiver and the 18-year-old running back and the 19-year-old, 20-year-old linebacker go in press conferences, you're telling me that you can't put the 48-year-old official out there to sit there as an adult and answer max 3 questions as to why, what they saw and why they called it that way? But it's okay to put the 19-year-old out there to answer questions from this mob about what happened on the interception. What did you see? But you can't put the 49-year-old official out there to say, okay, this is what I saw, this is why I called it. I don't agree with this send a pool reporter in. So I don't agree with that stuff. Right? Bring them out. Have the rule be it is limited to three questions. That's it. Well, we'll bring all three out together, or in football, all seven out together. What did you see? And only upon request from the media. They have to be available after every game, but you got to be accountable for what you do. It's okay for them to explain what they saw and why they called it. I mean, you can't sit there and treat a 19-year-old differently than a 59-year-old. I mean, you expect far more media accountability from a 19-year-old in college sports than a 59-year-old. Really? You're an adult. You made the call. You're responsible for it. Just tell me what you saw. See, I don't like that part. That's too sheltered. Got to be more transparent. Games mean too much. That's what the coaches will tell you. When the official comes over and just tells them, this is what I saw, they at least respect it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Lawrence realizes the big dig costs $14.6 billion. His big dig in the news. It was only over budget by about $8 billion. I don't want you to start thinking that the Lawrence show is over budget, but
must be the cost of the talent on the show.
No. All right. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Marcus Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They'll take care of all of your insurance needs, and they will do it in a way where you'll sit back and say, wow, they really do get me, the individual, in my situation. That's what the Purdy's have done for decades. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So Patrick Chambers, expect one or the other. It's going to be either a fine or a suspension, one of the two. But you know what? You have to be entitled to say what you think at times. And I'm sure he understood the consequences going in, but you know what? I'm glad he said it. And if I were in his shoes, in his same shoes, I would have said it. Did I say it in the broadcast? No, but I have a different way of doing a broadcast, and it's not my livelihood at stake as I sit there and do this. And you know, his players have got to sit there and now sit there and say, you know what? Our coach threw it out there in the line to support us. And it's not the way the Big Ten's going to see it, because the Big Ten obviously has to make sure that officiating is protected. That is part of their job completely. I understand that. But at the same time, it's Patrick Chambers' job to say, you know what, here's a line in the sand. I've had enough.
Steve,
I would like to see you do a better job at your job.
In looking at the video that, by the way, is available on our Facebook page now, you can actually see clearly what looks like a definite wrong call. So I'm wondering if the Big Ten gets a chance to look at that, if it'll end up being a fine instead of a suspension. In other words, if they would have looked at this post game and said, you know what, I don't think you're right there, Coach Chambers, then you're going to get a suspension. Maybe this will just be a fine because he's right. I mean, let's be frank about it. He's right.
Except you cannot use incompetent. To use a general term here, please. I'm just using a general term. I'm not labeling what Kelly did one way or the other. You know, it
mistakes happen, but you can't label what you perceive to be an incompetent call as a defense. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. And as I've said before, look, the worst single thing an official can do, what's the worst thing an official can do?
Well, I know what my guess would be. Yeah. I don't know what's right. That would be like guessing
Guess.
Or reacting.
Guess is guessing. Assuming yeah, oh, I saw something. It had to have been an illegal screen. That's what caused the players to get out. Had to be. You can't guess. You can only call what you see. For example, I'll give you an example of my job. Brandon Taylor. People have told me repeatedly they thought Jake Lehman, when that play started, hit Brandon Taylor in the face with an elbow or arm or whatever, and that they thought it should be a flagrant foul. I still have not seen the play, that part of it, because as soon as the ball got out of there, I started looking at the ball and taking fans down the court with the ball. So I didn't see that, and to be honest with you, part of what should be standard radio operation at this level should be a great stat, a really good stat monitor, and on the table, the broadcast team should all have a television monitor so we can look at and talk about what they're reviewing as an example. We don't have that. That's wrong. That should be a basic tool that we should be allowed to have. And I would like to see that down the road.
But you're also saying that they don't even show the replay in the arena when they're looking at it.
No, and they should. Every arena, they should show it. They all have video boards, the whole thing. The fan is paying good money. Do not give them an incentive to watch it at home. Give the same amenities in the arena or the stadium that they have at home. It's all right. Okay, this is not okay. Today's game is, the people that bought the tickets, they didn't all walk in with clubs. They're not barbarians.
But if you're worried about the officials getting booed for missing a call that gets shown that's my point. If you're worried about the officials getting booed for a call that gets shown on the big screen that was wrong, well, then you got a bigger problem than showing the video of it. I mean, football, happens all the time, and at least they got it right there. So I think you said this in the first hour of the show. At least they're playing the replay so you can actually see what everybody else is seeing.
Right. I mean, why should the people at home have all the advantages of, like, what the heck happened on that? What are they reviewing? What are they looking at? And then nobody knows what they're looking at. But I'll tell you, the Geno Thorpe play in the Purdue game, which was a huge play. Matt Painter asked them to go to the monitor. They did. So instead of Penn State having the ball and a foul on Purdue, which is what stopped the clock, it ended up being Purdue ball after two free throws and the ball. Well, nobody in the arena knew what he did. I still don't know what he did. I still don't know. I mean, I'm there. I still don't know what he did. Explain it. It's okay to tell us. It's okay to show it. Okay? Let everybody know. Why should everybody look around and go, I don't know what the heck happened? Meanwhile, the people at home go, hey, I'll tell you what happened. I'm sitting right here. I'm watching it. Oh, so the person at home has all the advantages when all the advantages should be for the ticket holder who bought the ticket and their hard-earned money to go in and watch. Give them the advantages. Can't always be the person at home that says, I saw it. They showed it. Great. Oh, they didn't show it in the arena. They didn't show it in the stadium. Stop being afraid all the time. Stop being so protective. And as for Patrick Chambers, yes, something will happen. I understand that the Big Ten does, the Big Ten's well within its rights to do something. I understand. I get it. But you know what? There's only so many times you can sit there and go, well, I'm just going to have to go in there and be diplomatic about it. You know what? Sometimes it's diplomacy be damned. You just can't sit there and say, if I ignore it, it'll go away. The old Sam Malone line? Ignore the problem. It'll go away. Yeah, I can tell you right now, there's been too many instances where I've seen, we'll ignore the problem, and it never did go away. Okay? But that was the old Sam Malone line from Cheers. What's your philosophy in life? Ignore the problem. It'll go away. Well, guess what? He perceived there's a problem, and good for him. He decided not to ignore it. Now, is it going to cost him one way or the other? In low likelihood, yes. But he's going to look at his team, and his team's going to know that he fought for them. All right, freshman eligibility. And again, I think in my conference, I think I've been very fair and very direct about how hard officials work in this. Right, I mean, do you think that young official wanted to make a mistake?
I would hope
not. He doesn't want to make a mistake. He wants his profile to grow and grow and grow. And the only way you grow your profile is by getting as many right as possible. Because you want to work conference tournaments. You want to work the NCAAs or the NIT or the CBI, something. And you want your profile to grow. You want to be a Final Four official. You want to be considered among the elite. That's why you want to get as many right as possible. You don't want to miss one. You don't want to potentially swing a game one way or another with a call. So that has nothing to do with it. Now, did he miss it? Yes. Did he get it wrong? Yes. Freshman eligibility. The big problem in basketball is the NBA Players Association. Pure and simple. And they could care less what anyone in college basketball has to say. They could care less about my comments when it comes to this. I mean, she runs it. She could care less. I believe she's the one that made the statement, hey, without the players, there's no league. You know, can you say that about the owners? I don't know. If that were true, how come they're not televising Sandlot game, pickup games in New York City? So, the Players Association is the one that is adamant about the one and done. In fact, they'd like to see one and done be removed, and you just go 18, and if you want to go, go. The NBA would like to see 2 years and 20. That's what David Stern wanted. That's what Adam Silver continues to want. Two-year college, 20-year-olds. Now, from the league's point of view, I don't blame them. I want a more mature league. Here's the next part. What's the biggest difference between the NBA draft and the NFL draft? In the NFL draft, you're drafting to get players that you think fill a need and can step in and play for you. The Indianapolis Colts have a need. They get Andrew Luck. Pittsburgh Steelers 2 years ago had a need. Second round, they drafted Le'Veon Bell. When they needed a quarterback, they drafted Ben Roethlisberger. When they needed a safety, they drafted Troy Polamalu. And by the way, I'm really surprised that this has not been brought up in today's show, but happy birthday, Jerome Bettis.
He's in the hall now. That is his birthday present.
He's been elected to it. He's not in yet. And
time issue there.
Yeah, well, accuracy issue. And when you look at it, that's where it comes down to. I think the way things are now, especially with stipends and so forth, they'll never do this, but this is what they should do. The heck with the freshman ineligibility rule. I don't quite, you know. The Pac-12 proposed it, blah, 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 whatever. We'll vote on it. Sure, great, yeah. Look, you're 18 years old. And I was mentioning the NFL. You drafted and you had, you know, in the NBA what you draft? 9 times out of 10? projects. When's the last time you saw an NBA pick fill a need and lift the team into another stratosphere? Where, wow, the draft changed everything. When? I mean, New Orleans is now better after drafting Anthony Davis, but this is his second year in the league, and I believe they're still on the outside looking in the playoff picture. It's amazing. In the NFL, you draft needs and fill holes. In the NBA, you draft projects. What I would like to see is this, and they won't do it, but this is still what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the baseball-football rule put in for basketball. In baseball, if you want to, if I get drafted by the Pirates or the Phillies, I could either opt to go to the Phillies or the Pirates and work my way through the minors as an 18-year-old, or I can go to college and then play for 3 years. And then after 3 years, decision time. In the NFL, excuse me, in college football, you have to play 3 years before you're even eligible to be drafted. To me, with the NBA, you're 18. You want to come out. You want to be Kevin Garnett. You want to be Kobe. You want to be LeBron James. Go ahead. I don't care. Knock yourself out. I always love these stories. I hear, huh, a poor guy came out. He's just languished in the D League for 10 years. I don't feel badly for him. He and his parents or his entourage or whatever made a decision. I'm not going to sit there and go, really, I feel awful, man. You should have gone to college. Well, you know, when you're 18, you could have gone to college. You opted for this. So whomever gave you bad advice or whatever, okay, well, you made some cash. So I really don't have too much, would have too much sympathy for that. But if you're going to go to college, I will give you a 4-year guaranteed scholarship and you have to play for me for 3. And then make a decision one way or the other at the end of 3. And by the way, if you want to come back and get your degree with that 4th year, you know, after being a professional or as a professional, whatever, look, you can still go to school and finish the school part up on us. But I'll give you a 4-year scholarship. You have to play a minimum of 3. That in turn would then create a more mature NBA draft. And I think a more impactful NBA draft. It'd actually be better for the league. Suddenly out of nowhere, you have a more mature league. And yeah, you'd be having the Mike Krzyzewskis, the Jim Boeheims, the John Calipari's, maybe even a Patrick Chambers, a Thad Mata. They're actually helping develop your future talent. And they're all really good coaches and all really good tacticians. Dave Paulson as an NBA player, Mike Piscala. In a perfect world, that's what I'd like to see. 18, decision time. Go pro. I'm putting my name into the NBA draft. Fine by me. Go ahead. That's great. Opt to go to college. Well, if you opt to go to college, well, you got to make a minimum 3-year commitment. I'll give you a 4-year scholarship. College isn't for everybody. But I think players should have that option. But if you commit to go to college, you need to commit for 3 years. It would benefit them, I think. It would benefit college basketball. But I also think it would benefit the NBA. A more mature competitive league is a good league. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Right now, I told Kevin before the show, I said, I cannot wait for the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament in May.
It's assuming the snow's on. That's assuming it warms up enough by then.
Oh, I have had enough. Enough is enough. Just brutal. It's 9 below 0 here.
I had 3 below this morning.
Yeah, it was 9 below here. I know every time something like this happens, the Ohio State game in football, this situation here with Maryland the other night, people would say, we got to get out of the Big Ten. I've had enough of being in the Big Ten and blah, blah, blah. Look, you have to have big picture of ability. You have to. I know when this vote was put up back in 25 years ago now. It'll be 25 years ago coming up in June. June 4th, 1990. So it'll be 25 years in June. It ended up being 7-3. I think it would. And my information's always been that Michigan, Indiana, and Minnesota voted no, and Northwestern was the swing vote. Once they convinced Northwestern that, hey, well, we're not kicking you out in favor of Penn State, they then voted yes, became the 7th vote. And the debate about whether Penn State should be in or not lasted for 5 months. And they finally took the vote. But in the end, you have to have a big picture look and feel to it. You can't make your decisions that are short-sighted. Because, look, there are 4 different categories of people in charge. There are leaders, there are decision-makers, there are schemers, and there are incompetents. A leader has foresight and has a chance to see, okay, here's the big picture. This is what I envision can happen by doing something. This is what happens if we go down this road. Well, in reality, despite pluses and minuses, ups and downs, the Big Ten has been best for Penn State, but conversely, Penn State has been best for the Big Ten. And the Big Ten knows it every time they negotiate a contract. Having the brands in Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska now helps at the negotiating table. Conversely, and once it's all settled down, believe me, Penn State's been able to get through part of this because of the revenue sharing in television. People forget about that. That was never taken away.